So the topic I picked for this evening's Chabura is Shomer Pesoyim Hashem. I guess before I get started, I'd like to first thank Rabbi Silber and Yehuda, of course, for allowing me the opportunity to give this year. I haven't done anything like this probably, I don't know, ever. So thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. I'd also like to thank my son-in-law, Yehuda Leib Birnbaum, who towards the end of this package, you'll see he has a whole write-up. He's much smarter than I am, and he put together a very in-depth study of this topic as well. And I also found sources on the internet. There was a gush here that I found from a guy named Jonathan Ziering, who I'd never heard of before, but he gave a very nice share on this topic, as well as there's a website called Olam.net, which also had a lot of these sources as well. So a combination, and then the tradition sources and the other source that we'll discuss about immunization in a little while I just had as well. So when we learned this daf, I guess it was like 2 weeks ago or so, it was on a Shabbos, Rabbi Silber stopped for just a moment, and he pointed out that on the topic of Shomer Pesoyim Hashem, he had a Rebbe in YU who had said, while, you know, it's a very broad topic, and as we're going to get into this evening, this could capture a lot of different topics, such as driving, which can be considered dangerous. But Rabbi Silber said that he had a Rebbe who talked about, you know, jumping out of parachutes and things along those lines. So one of the reasons, I think it's just a very interesting topic, but one of the reasons, and I don't mean to take all the suspense out of it, and we obviously won't dwell on it, but the last article in the packet was an article from the science section of the New York Times back on October 24th. The timing is everything. And it's entitled "The Parachute's Record Fall Over 25 Miles in 15 Minutes." And it talks about how there's a senior vice president of Google who decided he wanted to break the world's record about parachuting from the highest location in space. And if you turn to page, it's number 27, Mark Kelly, who's a former astronaut, said, "There's an incredible amount of risk. To do it safely is a testament to people involved." And as you look towards the bottom of the page, it says, "Alan is a risk taker with a passion for details." So I think, as we will discuss this evening, and this shouldn't come as any shock, while certain things you're allowed to do, from a Jewish perspective, this is not a smart thing to do. Roller coasters are okay. From a halachic perspective, as we're going to discuss, roller coasters, various things like that, as we will get into, are fine. Jumping 25 miles from space is not a good idea. So we first have to establish some organizing principles to understand this topic. And I'd like you to turn, if you could, to page 1. And here we have the Rambam, who discusses the general rule. And the Rambam says that the general rule is Echa Hagag v'Echa Kol Davar Sheyesh Bo Sakana v'Roy Sheyesh Bo Adam v'Yamus. The Rambam basically says that you'll see with all the sources, we're not going to walk through and translate every single source. I'll just kind of summarize what they are, because otherwise we'll never get through them. But the Rambam basically has the general rule that it's usher to place yourself in danger. You're forbidden to put yourself in danger. And he quotes a pasuk. He says, "Hishamar lecha u'shmor nafshecha miyod." You have to take care of yourself. And what's interesting about this, and this is not our topic, but his source for this seems to be Brachos Daf Lamed Beis. That source is not particularly obvious, because if you look at that particular sugya, if you look at that particular discussion, you actually have a Roman general who's saying that. It's not a Tana, it's not an Amora, it's not a Jewish rabbi, it's a Roman general who was talking about, if you have a snake that's wrapped around you, can you interrupt yourself during Shemon Esrei? And he says, well, you've got this pasuk, Yisham Lecho Shmor Nafshecha Miyod. So, again, we can learn, you know, lessons from in this case, a Roman general. But the Rambam says in the second paragraph, he says, "Harbe devarim asru chachamim b'nei sheyesh bohem sakonos nefashos." There are many things that chachamim forbade because of sakonos nefashos. V'chol ha'over aleihem, and anyone who transgresses on them, v'yomer harbeidim ma'amaskin v'yatzmi ma'alachim alai b'kach, oh, any makbid al kach, making us all makas martis. If someone takes the very casual attitude, is I basically don't care. I'm a risk taker. I can jump 25 miles from space. So he gets malchus. He gets lashed as a result of that. Because in the Rambam's As he's establishing the principles, taking from the Gemara, and this is, I think, a well-known Rambam, is that you can't put, it's also to place yourself in danger. So if that's the case, there are five instances in the Talmud in which the Gemara talks about Shomer Pesachim Hashem, five different cases. One of them, we had the Zechus of learning with Rabbi Silber a couple of weeks ago, and that sugya actually is in a couple of different places, it's in Ketubos as well, and it's going to be source number two. And we're going to go through all five cases kind of quickly, and then what I'm hoping we're going to do is establish some organizing principles here, and then I want to look at some tshuvas, which are sort of halacha l'maisa, interesting tshuvas about smoking, immunization, basically taking some hazards in life, is this standard? Is this something you can do? You just can't do. So the first source, which we had with Rabbi Silber a couple of weeks ago, is the source about Meshameshes B'moch, whether or not you can use some sort of contraception. And the Gemara says, Shlosha Nashim Meshameshes B'moch, there are three types of women who can use this kind of contraception. Eluhem Katana Umiveris Uminika. It's a minor or a woman who is nursing or a woman who is pregnant. Katana, so the Gemara explains, why is that? Katana, Shema Tisaber Vitamus. The reason a woman, a Katana, can do it is because maybe she'll become pregnant and she'll die. Muberis, a woman who's pregnant. Shema Tasel Ubrasandel. Maybe she will have, and I think Rebbe described it as like having a deformed kind of face. The fetus will be deformed as a result. And Manika, a woman who is nursing, Shema Tigmal Espina, maybe she will go ahead and she will wean her son who she's nursing right now. And what's interesting is if you think back, this is dealing in Talmudic times where they didn't have Similac, and they didn't have any other kinds of substitute for a mother nursing her child. And so if the woman was going to go ahead and wean her son because she became pregnant, that would kill the child. And so there were no substitutes in those days. So in these three instances, the Gemara says that she can use this contraceptive device in order to prevent pregnancy. So the Gemara just says, just very quickly, it says, Veza Katana, who's a Katana? So the Gemara explains that it's a woman who, it's a girl who is 11 to basically 12, and it says, Pachas Mikam V'yose Alkein Mishamishis Gedachav Holeches. If she's younger than that, and I think the Gemara's the thought is that if she's younger than that, she's not getting pregnant. And if she's older than that, then she can just go ahead and have relations without any sort of worry. Divri Rabbi Meir. But the Chachamim say, Achazu v'yachazu, Mishameshes Kedarkav Holeches. You know, they say you can just, you don't have to worry about it. Umin Hashemayim Yirachamu, and heaven will have mercy on you. Mishum Shenemar, Shomim Pesachim Hashem. That God protects what we normally do. That's the first example. And we're going to have to, we'll get to this in just, let's look at the third source here. It's a Gemara Masechta Shabbos, which talks, and this is a very interesting Gemara, remarkable Gemara. It's Amar Shmor, Parsha Dedama, which is bloodletting, Kol Tfasin Yamin, you can do it every 30 days. And the Gemara goes on to say, if you are over 40, you shouldn't do it so much. If you're over 60, you shouldn't do it so much. But then the Gemara says what's relevant to us. Shmuel says that there are certain days of the week in which you can do it. He says on Sunday you can do it, on Wednesday you can do it, on Friday you can do it, but you shouldn't do it on Mondays and Thursdays. So Gemara says, why? But the Gemara says, if you have Zechus Avos, if you have, you know, Yichus, if you have, you know, good lineage, then you can do it, even on Mondays and Thursdays. So what's the deal with Mondays and Thursdays? Why is that a problem? So the Gemara says, because Beth Din Shomala V'Shomata Shavim Ke'echad. Because we all know that on Mondays and Thursdays, the Beis Din of the town would meet, and also it says the celestial Beis Din would meet as well. And as a result, they're kind of getting together. And I once heard Rabbi Schwab say that you don't want to be audited. You don't want to be. You just don't want people like looking through your books too carefully. And so, if you can avoid a Monday or a Thursday in terms of bloodletting, don't do it. Don't take that risk. But Gemara says, "Batal shabashav saw my time alone, and on Tuesday, why can't you do it? Mishum dekaim aleim madim bezuzi, because there's some sort of constellation. The Mars constellation is a problem." So the Gemara says, "Mila Shabbat nami kamizur. You also have this Mars issue on Erev Shabbos on Friday as well." So the Gemara says, "Kevan didashu bo rabim. Since everyone seems to do it on Fridays, shomer pesoyim Hashem. God watches out for the simple folks." So we're going to have to explain, why is it mutter, why is it allowed to do all of these things? Why is this principle of shomer pesoyim Hashem, God watches out for the simple people, simply because everyone does it? It's, you know, this is akin to, if you think for a moment, we all growing up, you know, your mother always said to you when you're growing up, if everyone in your class decided to line up and jump off the top story in the Empire State Building, would you do the same thing too? So the answer is no. You wouldn't jump off the top story of the Empire State Building if everyone else did it. And so why is it a matir? Why are we allowed to do this? Because, as the Gemara is going to say in all these cases, Kaven Dedashu Barabim, since everyone does it, Shomer Pesoyim Hashem. Why is that a justification for allowing us to take these kinds of risks that our first source, the Rambam, says you can't take these risks? And the fourth source is very interesting. And it's going to become relevant in a number of our sources in just a little while. The Gemara talks about how in the desert they never had a bris milah. And why didn't they have a bris milah? It says because there was the northern wind didn't blow while the Jews were traveling in the desert for 40 years. So, my time, why didn't it blow? The Gemara says, Mishum denezufi have, because God was upset at them, he was rebuking them, and viboisema do nifter le anani hakavod, because the northern wind would have blown away the anani hakavod. And the theory here is that if you have the northern wind, it's very mild, it allows the sun to shine, and so that's a healing kind of a process. On Rapapa, so Rapapa says, Hilchach, yoma de ava, yoma de shusa. And if you have severe southern winds, lo mahalin bay, velo misashin bay, you shouldn't do bloodletting, and you shouldn't have bris milah. V'ha'idna, and the Gemara is going to say again what the catchphrase we just said: the dust should be robin, since everyone seems to do it. Shomer pesayim Hashem. There are two other examples, and we'll just do them very quickly. One is source number 5, and that is Rav Chiya talks about how if you have dates and various other things which are left open because their stem is taken out, so you're allowed to eat it. And even though you left it overnight, like we've had Gemaras about leaving food overnight, that can be a bad thing. And so why can you do it? The Gemara says, Shomer Pesayim Hashem. And so in the last source, the fifth source, and I apologize, it's page 1B, I'm sorry, 1A, it's the next page at the bottom, 1A, and this is very interesting. I was not aware of this, and God willing, we will get to it with the Rav in a number of years. In Masechet Nida, Perek Shalishi, it says that you cannot have relations with your wife on the 90th day of her pregnancy. And the Gemara says, Amar Abaya, you can still have it, Mishamish V'Holech, you can still have regular relations, V'Shomer Pesayim Hashem, and God's going to watch out for you. So we have these five cases, just to review, the five cases. The first one is you can do bloodletting on Erev Shabbos. The second case is these three women who can use contraception. The third case is eating these kinds of foods which are left open overnight. The fourth case is having relations with your wife for 90th day of pregnancy. And the fifth case is this case about giving a bris milah if you don't have the northern wind blowing. So the question is that we're going to work at least initially, is that we have to do what is called a chakira. We have to distinguish these cases. What's going on here? Why all of a sudden do we have instances where, as we said, the Rambam says you can't do anything that endangers yourself, but we have these four cases that say that you can, and in many cases the Gemara says, since everyone does it, you can do it. So the question is there are two possibilities. One is that it's no longer halakhically defined as dangerous, and so therefore the Gemara is saying this is no longer halakhically defined as dangerous, and so therefore you can do it. Or instead, it's still dangerous. The Gemara is giving you a matir. It's giving you permission to engage in this dangerous activity since it's normal, since everyone else does it. So we're going to look at a couple different sources, and we're going to see how different commentators go different directions in these two different approaches. Is it something which is still inherently dangerous, but we're not going to halachically define it as dangerous? Or, as we said, is it dangerous? Everyone agrees it's dangerous, but you have permission to engage in this dangerous activity since everyone else engages in this dangerous activity. So the first source we're going to look at is a Trumas Hadeshen. It's a very interesting case, and it happens to be today's daf. It's today, the constellations have aligned themselves, the northern winds have blown, which is that today's daf, the Rav taught us about a katlanis. A katlanis, just to review very quickly, is either, as the Rav says, it's either a woman who was married to two husbands that died or three husbands that died. And the rule is that after either time number two or time number three, she can't get remarried. And I once heard a shir years ago that it's not something sexist. I think it may have been a shir from Rabbi Fran, who quoted some source who said that in those days, men were the breadwinners. It's sort of complicated, but the bottom line is it's not meant to, and it's going to be off the topic, but it's not meant to be a sexist thing. It's just, this is the halacha. So the Trumas Hadeshen dealt with a situation. He says, you look around the world, and people are doing it. People are marrying women who have had two husbands that died or three husbands that died. So what's going on? So the Trumas Hadeshen, if you look at the top of the second page, he says, at the top of the second page, the top line, he says, the truth is it's really dangerous. But he says that a Talmud Chacham, he says in the top line, a Talmud Chacham shall be Machmir. And so we see the Trumas Hadeshen is taking the approach that it's, and breaking into the two categories we had, it's a Matir. It gives you, it's a dangerous thing to do, but it's a Matir, and that you can still marry this woman, and the Trumas Hadeshen is blasting people for doing it. He says, don't do it, and Talmidei Chachamim, who should know better, and we're going to get to this a little later on as well, they should cut it out, because they really know better, but if you do it, it's a matir. There's a Ritva, and actually, there's a Ritva here that's on, it's source number 7, but I actually, if you could, and I'm sorry to do this, I don't do this that often. In fact, I never do this. If you can just turn to page 1b, the Ritva on the Gemara that we just had in Yevamos, which talked about Bris Mila, it's in the middle of I have it marked as 7a. The Ritva says, Shomer Pesachim Hashem, and the Ritva says that if you Mandalo Boy the Mahel Biyoma, the Avi Harushus Biyado, he says you're allowed to do Vashaper Avid Shalom Lismuch Ashomer Pesachim Hashem. But the Ritva says, you really shouldn't be so mech on Shomer Pesachim Hashem, who adin shahi roi shalom limo b'shabbos v'shehu yom moyam. He says you shouldn't even do a bris mila on Shabbos if you don't have this northerly wind situation. And so you have, in these two cases, you have the Ritva and you have the Trumas Hadeshen. They're both coming from different perspectives. The Trumas Hadeshen is saying that there is a danger, but you shouldn't marry these women. But you can do it, except Talmidei Chachamim really shouldn't do it. While the Ritva is saying is that you should be machmir in this kind of situation. You really shouldn't engage in these activities. It's better not to do it. It's you're allowed to do it, but you shouldn't do it. And I just want to, before we get into the halacha lemaisa, very different cases. If you look at the two sources 8 and 9, this is a sort of not even our parachute case. But there's Rav Cook says, can you go on, I'm looking on page 2, on source 8 and 9, Rav Cook says that, can you go on a dangerous kind of tiyul? Can you go on a dangerous kind of hike? So Rav Cook says, Shena miharoi, you shouldn't take your life, you shouldn't place your life at risk. It's really not a good idea to do. Rav Moshe, in the tshuva that we have marked as number 9, says, listen, you should daven, but live a little. You can do it. It's dangerous, but Rav Moshe says in this tshuva, and we're going to get to some other Rav Moshe tshuvas about smoking and about Rav Yudah HaChassid has some things that you can't do that we're going to talk about as well in just a moment. If I can have you turn, please, to page 3 and source number 10. And this is a very interesting binyan sion, which we're going to see that Rabbi J. David Blythe is going to cite a little later on when we talk about various kinds of medicines or smoking and things along those lines. And if you look at what is underlined in source number 10, he says, Isha shekol pam sheileide kashasa leileide, v'hoisa b'sakana gedola v'nimta. There was a woman who every time she gave birth, it was very difficult, and she was putting herself in great danger. Aval me'ata amu harofoim, her doctor said, li'bal yikarov, od alishto, and basically, the doctors are saying that, you know, he should not be having relations with his wife anymore because he's going to put his wife's life in great danger. So the binyan sion is going to say a distinction which we're going to see played out in some of the smoking cases and some of the later cases as well, which is very fascinating. If you look to the bottom where it's sort of like an arrow, he says, we're going to sort of run through some of this. He basically gives two factors. He says, it's okay for the husband and wife to have a regular relationship. And the reason for that, he says, the amphagoth de klavio denu de ain lo dover ome bifne pikuach nefesh, even though we know as a general rule, you know, you don't mess around with pikuach nefesh. And you know what? You don't even, in vada, in bishyesh vada sakonos nefesh lefonenu, if we're talking about a case where there's actually sakonos nefeshos, we're talking about someone's life is on the line in front of us, avo bishato in kam pikuach nefesh. But in this case, it's not really pikuach nefesh, rak shyesh. He makes a distinction between an immediate danger and a future danger, which could happen somewhere down the road. And he says, if it's not an immediate danger, but instead it's a danger which may occur somewhere down the road, then he says there's another factor as well that that then you could do it, but also because we can assume that in the majority of cases, no harm is actually going to come. And you look at the second column, he says, the Aeneas Dite Gankane time with the Rabbana cave in the Beod Shalod Nisabro ain Khan Sakaras Nafashos Samhina Atima de Minashamai Mirachamo Shalot Tavoli de Sakana. So he has the Binyan Sion has two factors. He says, first of all, you have to look, is it an immediate danger or is it a future danger that's going to occur? And if it's only a future danger that's going to occur, then you have to look, do most people have a safe experience or do the majority of cases, is no harm going to occur? Then you can engage in that conduct. If you look
in
at
other words, even though for this particular person that eventuality is going to...
Well, he's questioning the doctor. He doesn't actually, the Binyan Sion doesn't seem to think that's, the way I read it is that he thinks he's overreacting, in a sense. That he's not putting him,
but his shayla is a moch shayla.
Right.
That's
so it's not...
it's not really, can they engage in relations?
It's can they use a moch while they engage in relations.
Exactly. Does she have a head
for birth control?
Or not?
Right.
And then, what's interesting is what works with the pikuach nefesh might actually work against the moch, because if you say it's vaday sakhanas nefashos, the moch should be permitted, right? But again, if it's delayed sakhanas nefashos, then maybe the moch is not permitted,
right?
So does he pass and they can't use the moch?
No. So he's saying in this case
you can't.
Right.
You can use the moch.
Right, because it's and we're going to see it gets into cigarette smoking in a little while as well. Which actually we will see is sort of, I think it's a dated tshuva in the sense that the science has sort of caught up on that. If you look towards the bottom of it, and this sort of dovetails with perhaps the Binyan Sion, the Achiezer says, and this is on the left-hand column, he says, Davka b'chashash rochok shalo chashu uvadei lo tisaber avohecha chichisaber v'lidriri harofim ikosakona. In that case, he's again talking about immediate danger versus a future danger. If you can turn the page to page 4, there's two very interesting tshuvas at the very top. One is the Ben Ish Chai, and the Ben Ish Chai says, and he says it in very strong languages, Amru Chachamim, our sages say, Chamira Sakanta Tefei Miyisura. Engaging in dangerous activity is even more is more heavy duty than Isura. Everyone should take care to guard themselves and to watch themselves and the members of their family to not engage in dangerous behavior. And Timsa become a devar mishum b'shoyim Hashem a yismach ha'adam al hanis. You shouldn't rely on a miracle happening. The im omsim lo leis menachem mizruch Yosef, and this is a well-known thought, that if you can count on a miracle happening, that's going to reduce your merits. The adam yishtadol lasos shmirah kol masha biyad lasos. And what he says, what he seems to be saying, is that only, and we'll see later that in one of the other sources, that he's saying you should only say shomer p'soim Hashem in a bidyevet situation. But in a lecharkila, in a situation where you're like, you have a choice, then you really shouldn't be somech on shomer p'soim Hashem. You shouldn't be somech on this theory, because you can't count on a miracle always happening. So be conservative, don't do crazy things. And the kovetz shiurim, Rabbi Chanan, on the left-hand side, he also says, if you just look at what's underlined, he says towards the bottom, he says, "Di'ein adam chayv limnoa mimnu derech eretz," and we're going to see this comes up in a couple. You don't have to engage in like just acting normally, being normal. Umemela havi ki'ilu ein ber lishmo esasma v'oz nishmar min hashemayim. And if you act normally, then God's going to protect you. Avochecha shibyadu lizara ein bechlal pesoyim. He says, you don't have to deviate from the norms. You can act as a normal human being acts. But on the other hand, normal human beings also don't walk across I-95 in the dark. You know, so you have to use some common sense as well. If you look at the very bottom, and this is going to get into the immunization, on the right-hand column, there's a Mincha Shlomo, there's a tshuva from Shlomo Zalman about chickenpox, and we're going to get to immunization just in a little while. But the point of this is that if you look towards the bottom of it, he says, Ela shibisadasar tichol shederach ro b'nei adam livrach mizeh kivrach m'bnei hasakana harezeh choshev kesofik pichoach nefesh. And he says, like, his definition seems to be, if I'm reading it right, that if you're going to be free, if other people are going to be freaked out because it's pikuach nefesh, then you shouldn't engage in those actions. And if you look at the bottom, the Shemir Shabbos Kehocha saw, it's funny because when we first had children many years ago, the pediatrician who we're using is a very nice man, but he happens not to be Orthodox, and he was very concerned that my wife, if something was wrong with one of our children, would not call her on Shabbos. And he said to her, I mean, now he calls her Beth, but at the time, he said, you know, Mrs. Adler, if it's really serious, you can pick up the phone, you can call me on Shabbos. And she was like, I know that. But apparently, he said this to her because he said that he doesn't take anything for granted, and he just wants to make sure that you're aware of that. And as you can see from the bottom of the Shemir Shavuos Yochasa, you can't say Shomer Pesoyim Hashem in a dangerous situation. If, God forbid, Rahman Lathan, your child is suffering on Shabbos, you can't just throw up your hands and say, okay, God's going to protect me. You can't take a Christian Science attitude. You have to be responsible. And I think as we get through some of these tshuvas, we're going to see that as well. Let's take a look at page 5. This is the famous tshuva from Moshe Feinstein about smoking. It's on 11 on the right hand side. Ramosha, and this you'll have to see. This goes back to Tuf Shin Chavdala. So I think that's, I'm not sure, but it's a long time ago. Right?
1964.
Okay. So he says, Avolomer she'asher mi isher sakhanaso. Mechivin shadashu bo rabim. Everyone seems to do it. Kevar Esau, he says, Shomer Pesoyim Hashem. Uprat shekame gedoli taro midara sheavru uvidarneinu shemashin. We see that many people smoke. So lekar iser, I don't think it's usher halachically to smoke. I want to go a little out of order. If you can turn to page 8 for a minute in your handout.
Just of interest is in 1964 is when, this, I don't know if that brought this up, but so in general actually came out with the... Is that what you're saying?
Right. So let's look at page 64. 8 for a minute, and this is from the tradition from the summer of 1977, an article by Rabbi J. David Blyton. And if you he talked about there was a pronouncement by the Sephardic chief rabbi of Tel Aviv who declared cigarette smoking to be a violation of Jewish law, and it was published in the New York Times and various other people. If you look at the bottom of that first column, what's interesting is a similar view was advanced by Rabbi Nathan Drazen of Baltimore Faint, Stephen's grandfather.
That's right.
Who wrote an article, Rabbi Drazen wrote an article called Halachic Attitudes and Conclusions to Drug Problems and Its Relations to Cigarette Smoking. So he says, and we don't have to quote the whole thing, but you're going to see he comes up with some of the responses that we've discussed. He says, in the opinion of this writer, it is not possible to sustain the argument that smoking, in addition to being foolhardy and dangerous, involves an infraction of halachic law. Rabbi Blake is not saying you should smoke. He's just saying, I don't think you're committing an aveira by smoking. And you're going to see, he says, and there are two reasons for that. And the first one is our topic tonight from Moshe Feinstein. He says, in a tshuva, which is just seven and a half lines in length, which we just saw, Moshe says that he dismisses the contention that smoking constitutes a violation of Jewish law. Now, if you turn to look at the bottom of the page, it says the concept embodied in the dictum of Shom Persayim Hashem is not difficult to fathom. I thought this is just very well written. Not that he needs my haskama, but I just think it is. He says, willfully to commit a daredevil act while relying upon God's mercy in order to be preserved from misfortune is an act of hubris. It is sheer audacity for man to call upon God to preserve him from calamity which man can himself avoid. Therefore, one may not place oneself in a position of a recognized danger, even if one deems oneself to be worthy and deserving a beneficiary of divine guardianship. Nevertheless, it's universally recognized. He goes on to say, and towards the bottom of that column, he says, an act which is not ostentatious, which does not flaunt societal accepted norms of behavior, and does not draw attention to itself, is not regarded by halacha as an unseemly demand for divine protection. And so he's saying, in my view, don't push the envelope. If you act normal, which is the Dashu Bei Rabim, and you're not saying to God, I'm going to take lots of risk and I expect you to cover my back on this, then God's going to watch out for you. And then the second column, he brings the tshuva which we saw from the Binyan Sion, which we just looked at quickly, which would be, the Binyan Sion basically talks about the distinction between an immediate danger and a potential or future danger, as we saw in the middle of that column. And this is interesting because, again, this I think, you know, as Bernie is saying, I think this is dated somewhat because if you look at page 10, he says the health hazard in the middle of the column on the left-hand side, he says the health hazards posed by smoking lie in the future. To be sure, certain physiological changes occur immediately, but you can't see it right away. And so, therefore, under the theory of the Binyan Sion's responsa, there's no halakhic reason to ban this activity. He goes on, of course, to say, I still don't think it's a good idea, and you really shouldn't smoke, but if our focus is this a aveira or not an aveira, we can see based on this that it's not an aveira. And if we can just turn back, please, and I'm sorry we skipped ahead, I just want to walk through a couple of other interesting tshuvas. There was, as many of you may know, there's Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, who had a whole bunch of rules that he said that you should follow. And, I've heard, may not apply today, may apply today, maybe it just applied to his family, we're not all members of his family, but one of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid's rules was, Shel yase adam merchas beso beso. You shouldn't have a bathhouse inside your house.
Right,
and I'm sorry, I'm source 12 on page 6.
Six.
Source 12, page 6, on the top right-hand column. So they asked for Moshe, what about this Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid who says you're not supposed to have a merchatz, you're not supposed to have a bathhouse in your house? He says, if you look at the second column, what do we do about our toilets? What do we do about our showers, our bathtubs, things along those lines? He says, Uvaha b'minosenu osin b'chol beso cheder miyuchel l'hamid sham ambati lirchotz kol gufo. What do we do about in our days, in our countries, our modern-day countries, where we all have bathtubs? He goes on to say that if you look at the lines that are underlined, he says, Mimela lekot shuv chashas ladino kevan dekvarsh dashu be'rabim shomer pasayim Hashem. Since everyone does it, since everyone has these bathtubs, this Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, who said you shouldn't have these things in your house, it doesn't apply anymore because everyone does it.
Does Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid give a reason why America?
I don't think he gives reasons for any of his. I don't think he does.
Like drowning?
So I thought of that. I learned this very late last night with my son-in-law, and I said throughout to him, and he said, I just don't know that there's reasons for a lot of his rules. Some of them, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're not supposed to marry a girl who has the same name as your mother, or things along those lines. Right, it's things which, but people still seem to follow it, and that's why they were asking Rav Moshe here, you know, is this something which we need to follow as well?
I wasn't here at the beginning, I don't know if you talked about this, but doesn't the word pesayim mean pesi, fool?
Right, so if you want to, we didn't discuss it. That can be one. I think the way it's maybe more diplomatically translated is simple. That God protects people that are simple, but it's been expanded to basically, as we're going to see, or as we have seen, that it's meant to cover if you act normally. If you just act normal, God got your back covered. God's going to watch out for you, because Shomer Pesayim Hashem, the pasuk in Holland. And just as organizing principles, if you turn to page 7, I just want to, and then we're going to go on to what I think are some very interesting topics and very topical topics of immunization, which have been in the news recently. If you look at page 13, at the top-hand column, it says, Shomer Pesayim Hashem, V'dashu Bo Rabim. He says, as we said, there are 5 places in the Talmud where it has these. I'm looking at page 7, source 13. He says, if you look towards the middle of the right-hand column, Yesh mehav poskim shehosifu satam shel shomer pesayim Hashem, the devarim shehanogim bohem heter biyomenu. These are things, shomer pesayim Hashem means, it's things that people are accustomed to do in our days. But the days of the Talmud, you couldn't do it because it was dangerous. But nowadays, since everyone seems to do it, Shomer Pesayim Hashem, God's going to watch out for you. But there are some opinions that say there's some opinions, and he brings in the footnote, and there's some, the Chaim Sha'al and the Chokashach and various other people that says, no, it's only Dafka, these 5 cases that the Gemara brought down, that you can do, you can say Shomer Pesayim Hashem. But you can't go crazy and just say, in any other situation, can you do Shomer Pesayim Hashem? It's just those 5 cases. And then it goes on to say, but, you know, as you can imagine, lots of people have different views on this. Yesh Mishakosuv, Shomer Pesayim Hashem, Rak B'dievet. That's only b'di'evit. Can you say Shomer Pesayim Hashem? Aval lecharkila roi la'adam shol lismach aklazeh. That as a matter of first, you know, if you're going to decide, should I do this risky behavior? Should I get on this roller coaster at Six Flags? So he seems to be saying, you know, if you're stuck on the roller coaster, then that's one thing. But to make the actual informed decision to do that, and then let's just finish this. I just want to point out like 3 or 4 other things on this page. But get her claw, zet dinu l'archon, chikain l'charakasha, that there's a question, a fundamental question, which we've sort of touched on. Heichin motzinu shemutar yihyeh l'adam l'hikonis atzma v'yachem b'safik ha'shtakana. How are you allowed to engage in dangerous behavior? V'lomer shomer pesayim Hashem, u'min ha'shamayim yirachamu. God's going to protect me. How can you say that? How can you, again, that was really how we started. The Rambam says you have to take care of yourself. So he goes through many of the various different things that we talked about so far today. If you look at the middle of the next column, he says, "Haklal zed namer dafka bedvar harogil ki in adam chayv limana minag derech eretz." And he's quoting over here one of the sources we've already seen, that Rav Chanan from Kovach Yoram, that if you act normal, God takes care of you. And another one, he says, if you look, it's the next one, Klaze Nemar Dafka Bechashashas Rechokim Umita Sheinu Motsoi, and this was the Binyan scene which we saw. If it's something which is not immediate, and it's also something which many people do it and they don't get hurt, then you're good to go. Now, if we can just turn to page 11, at source number 15, Rabbi Blythe had a more recent tradition article. The one we looked at previously was in 1977. This article from Rabbi Blythe is from 2003, at the very bottom. And he talks about using hazardous medical procedures. And he talks about conventional risk, Shomer Pesoim Hashem. And I just want to highlight some of the sections that he says here. If anyone is interested in the entire article, I have it. I can give it to you. I can email it to you. But he says there's an entire section at the very top, the first paragraph. He says an entire section of Shulchan Aruch is devoted to an enumeration of actions and situations that must be avoided because they present an element of risk. Some activities, for example, standing beside an unstable wall or drinking water has been left uncovered that a serpent might have come. And these are, it goes on. And then he talks about in the second paragraph that we have this principle of Shomer Pesoim Hashem, that God preserves, he translates it here, God preserves the simple. Since many people have trodden thereon, as we've talked about it, and so he says at the very bottom, he says, and I think that this kind of sums up where a lot of the Achronim, where a lot of the commentators come out. He says, the concept embodied in the dictum of Shomer Pesoim Hashem is not difficult to fathom. Willfully to commit a daredevil act while relying upon God's mercy in order to be preserved from misfortune is an act of hubris, as we saw him say before. It's sheer audacity to call on God to cover your back if you're going to do something, pardon me for saying it, something stupid. And he says, and that principle is clearly reflected in the statement of the Gemara, indicating that a person dare not endanger himself in anticipation that a miracle will be performed on his hack. But he goes on to say, yet at the same time, it is universally recognized, as Rabbi Silber said when we did the daf 2 weeks ago, that life is fraught with danger. You cross the street, you're riding an automobile, and even in a horse-drawn carriage for that matter, all involve a statistically significant danger. It is, of course, inconceivable that such ordinary activities be denied to man. Such actions are indeed permissible since everyone does it. And it's not like my example of, you know, everyone jumps off the Empire State Building and your mother told you not to do it. No, everyone does normal behavior. If they're engaging in normal behavior, you can do it even if it's not risk-free, even if it entails some type of danger. Since he says,
with that logic, you could say everybody drives fast.
Right, and or perhaps you could say people don't wear seatbelts. But I think...
But that's probably true. Everybody drives 65 instead of 55, so you could do that too. Maybe you can't go 95 because
So
that's not, that would not be Dushibo Robin. That would not be the majority of people. And as we're going to see with sort of the immunization issues, and hopefully we'll be able to touch on that in just a moment, whether or not immunization makes sense, they look at statistics. They look at, are we talking 50%, 10%, 40%, and deciding what is considered that this is what people do. And so therefore, because people engage in this behavior, therefore you're entitled to do it as well. And just to finish the sentence, he says, since such actions are indeed permissible, since the multitude has trodden thereon, since the attendant dangers are accepted with equanimity by society at large, since society is quite willing to accept the element of risk involved, any individual is granted dispensation to rely upon God who preserves the simple. Under such circumstances, the person who ignores the risk is not deemed to be presumptuous and demanding an inordinate degree of divine protection. On the contrary, he acts in the manner of the simple, and he says, Pesoim in this case is the simple, who perceives no problem, an act which is not ostentatious, which doesn't flaunt societally accepted norms of behavior and does not draw attention to it, is not, you're not looking for divine, extra divine protection in that case. I want to just close, and this is a very sort of interesting, I didn't give you the whole article, and if you'd like the whole article, I can email it to you. And actually, it occurred to me as I was going through the materials this evening and this afternoon that parts of the, I guess the most important part of the article I didn't include. But there's an interesting article by a rabbi, his name is Usher Bush, called Vaccinations and Halacha and Practice in the Orthodox Community. It's source number 16 on page 13. And he talks about, There's some controversy. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal about a month ago by a physician from the University of Pennsylvania. There was also an article in the New York Times about a month ago as well, basically saying that in some sectors of society which are very well educated, they are deciding not to engage in immunization anymore. And some of it has to do with, and some of these articles explain, since Baruch Hashem, thank God, we are not exposed to the same kinds of rubella, measles, polio that people were exposed to 50, 60 years ago. Ben Bradley just died and he had polio as a child. So therefore, people don't recognize the dangers that are involved. And so therefore, when they're weighing the dangers of immunization and there is some danger in immunizing your child, but it's very, very minute, as you would see in this article. They say, well, I don't want to do that because, listen, you know, I don't want to engage in that. And if you look at page 14 of the materials, Rabbi Yisrael Lifshitz, who was the Tiferes Yisrael, ruled that even though slight risks do exist in terms of immunization, the benefit of vaccination far outweighs the risks, and they permit it according to halacha. And he, strikingly, in 1896, he tells a story, there was a case in London where an Orthodox Jew was imprisoned for his refusal to vaccinate his child, claiming his religion forbade him from doing so. The prosecutor in the case, who was also Jewish, turned to the chief rabbi of Great Britain, Rabbi Adler, no relation, and the chief rabbi stated clearly that this man was not justified in making the statements contained in the letter. The most competent medical authorities were agreed as to vaccination being prophylactic against smallpox, and added that it was in perfect consonance with the letter and spirit of Judaism. And this article, at page 15, it says the purpose of this article is to address two fundamental questions. Firstly, whether there's a halachic obligation to vaccinate, and secondly, whether schools have the right or the responsibility to prevent unvaccinated children from attending the schools. And you will see on, I gave you some of the article, it gets into the discussion of Shomer Pesachim Hashem on page 18, but I certainly can send this to anyone that is interested in this article. It's a fascinating article, and it really goes through all the various issues. He talks about, and then I'm going to cut to the chase and tell you a very fascinating argument by Dr. Akiva Tatz, who is, I believe, a physician, but also a Rav, and he has something which I want to tell you instead of getting there. But he says, the following few paragraphs are from a former Surgeon General of the United States. And I'm sorry, I don't have that. That's what I realized today that I didn't give it to you, but I'll just read this to you quickly. But he says what I just said, which is that this is your perspective on the success of vaccination programs and how prevalent these diseases were not so many years ago. He says in 1955, between 1955 and 1954, on average, there were 16,360 polio cases and 1,879 deaths from polio. He talks about meningitis and also rubella, or otherwise known as German needles. Thousands and thousands of people that die. He says today, thanks to nearly universal use of an effective vaccine, these various diseases, Baruch Hashem, no longer exist. So he says that. But there's a very low rate of infection from vaccines, and he quotes Rav Shlomo Zalman and others, including Rav Herschel Schachter and Mordechai Willick, who both ruled that a parent cannot be compelled to vaccinate their child, regardless of how irrational their concerns are. However, they say that you really should do it. And then he quotes what I think is very interesting. There's a rabbi, Dr. Avraham, who wrote like the halachic book on medicine, and he quotes leading Israeli poskim who say that while we can't force parents to vaccinate their children, parents should be strongly encouraged to vaccinate their children, personal hesitations notwithstanding. And then he quotes a book by, as I said, Rabbi Akiva Tates. He wrote a book called Dangerous Disease and Dangerous Therapy. And he said he put the question to Rav Yashav, who ruled that the parents should accede to immunization despite their concerns. When asked if the reason behind his ruling was the issue of fairness, in other words, a school says, and I'll talk about them in just a second, if a school says you have to vaccinate your kid if you want your kid to come to the school, he says, when asked if the reason behind his ruling was the issue of fairness and the obligation to share responsibilities, Rav Yashav indicated that was his reason. His reason was that since immunization of children is normal practice throughout the world, one should follow normative practice. And that kind of takes our sheer sort of like full circle. That he goes on to say, in fact, Rav Yashav went so far as to assert that failure to immunize would amount to negligence. He says, refusing childhood immunizations on the basis of unsubstantiated fears of vaccine side effects is irresponsible and out of order halachically. The danger of precipitating an epidemic of measles or other diseases with potentially devastating complications is far more real than the dangers attributed to vaccines on the basis of anecdotal claims. Unless objective evidence to the contrary accrues, the halachically correct approach is to do what is normal. In addition, there's legitimate government legislation concerning standards of medical conduct adds weight to this halachic acceptability. So sort of like taking this sort of full circle, and there's more to say, and he goes on to say at the very, just, we have like 2 minutes, or so, happens to be under Maryland law that if you want your child to come to school, you have to vaccinate your child. There are two exceptions to that. One is if your child can medically not be vaccinated and does exist. But the second is if your child has a bona fide religious belief. It used to be, the statute said, is that you had to have a belief which was in accordance with a major religion. And Maryland's Court of Appeals ruled that was unconstitutional. You couldn't say that that was an infringement on people's personal beliefs. So the Maryland legislature, in its infinite wisdom, went ahead and it changed the statute. And it said, now, if you have a religious bona fide belief, then you don't have to immunize your child.
It seems to be so out there because so many people then could be affected by this one child who had a specific religious belief his parents had, and they could spread measles throughout the school, throughout the class, at the school room.
Right.
And where's the benefit? In other words, I'm not sure about the halachas, but the benefit of the klal, I think, supersedes the benefit of the individual.
Right, and he says in this article, and I'm happy to send this to you, he agrees with you, which is that basically he says at the end of the day, there is no validity to any suggestion that vaccinations are contrary to Jewish belief or practices. And the reason I think that he comes to that conclusion is vaccination, in addition to what Art is saying, it's normal. And so to sort of take this full circle is at the end of the day, why can you rely on Shomer Pesachim Hashem, and why to get back to our initial question that we asked is, why doesn't the general rule kick in that it's forbidden to place yourself in danger? And so the five instances in the Talmud where you were allowed to place yourself in danger are because, in general, you're acting normally. And if you act normally, then God's got your back covered. God's going to protect you, and that's where Shomer Pesachim Hashem kicks in. Thank you very much for everyone.
Thank you.